Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Tips and Tales podcast. As always, I'm your host, Robert Poe, and here with trainer and author George DaCosta. How you doing, George?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing good. Had a good holiday season. You know, we're past New Year's now, and do you have any fun plans or anything that happened over the holidays?
Well, my family came to visit. We've got two of my granddaughters sitting right here listening to the podcast right now, and had a great, wonderful Christmas. My son was here he's going to UC Davis, and then a couple of my other sons showed up, and we've done a couple pheasant hunts, a couple quail hunts, and just kind of hanging out together. I love it. I love when my kids are here.
Yeah. It's always fun. My wife and I went out to Kansas City, which is where her family's from, and got to spend time with them, and always good to spend the holidays with family.
Yes, it is. I enjoy it.
Yep. All right. Well, today we've got a couple of questions that we're going to roll through, and then we're going to tackle a pretty big topic of e-collars. So hold on to your hats for that. It should be a good conversation. I'm excited for it. But let's start off with the first question that a listener from Canada actually wrote in, and he has a younger dog that is doing great with everything, but the one thing that he's having trouble with is it won't give him back a retrieved bird. And he's worked on, you know, he has like a drop command or a give command, and the dog will do great with everything else except the bird, but it doesn't really chomp the bird either. So it's not like the bird's getting damaged. It just won't give it to him. So,
well, that's actually a really good dog. It's not damaging the bird. It's bringing it back. It just doesn't want to do the delivery. And again, as I always, I qualify, I'm not reading the dog, so I'm going to give some general information here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But first of all, I'd like to say there's two ways that I get a dog to release the bird if it doesn't want to release. And I did this the other day. I was pheasant hunting with a friend of mine, Kirk, and we were actually pheasant and quail hunting. And I had a bunch of quail in my car, just on the floor in the front seat of the by the Jeep, and his dog ran in there and grabbed one of the quails and, you know, took off with it, and it was like kind of holding it, and mm-hmm. and I grabbed it by the collar and I said, give. Well, of course, didn't want to give to me. He was like, you know, forget you. And so I just took my finger and I do my little release on what I call it, the release switch, and boom, he popped the quail right out into my hand, and Kirk was like, how'd you do that? So the two ways I get a dog to deliver the bird if they won't release it is, one is I roll their lip underneath the front teeth and just kind of press on their lip, and they open it up. Now, my dogs, when they're puppies and when they start to bite you when they're young, I give the no command, and we talked about the no command, and if they're biting down, I'll roll their lips so they're biting on themselves, so they kind of know when I roll that lip to let go. So that's one of the ways I do it, and I think he mentioned that he did that. The other way that I do it, if I have a dog that just will not release a bird, is I take my finger and under the back flank, just between the back legs and the flank, you push up in that area, and I call that the release switch. And what happens is the dog does not like that feeling at all. So they let go of the bird to reach back to see what you're doing, and the bird will pop right out, and they'll kind of turn to have you go, hey, stop that. Sometimes they'll even give a little yelp. That'll get the bird out every time. But that's just to get a dog to release the bird. The main root, and I don't want to say cause, but the main root reason that most dogs don't deliver the bird is because we haven't done the automatic response in the delivery. And what I do with that is I use a treat all the time, and I start when they're doing the hold. Remember the hold? We talked about the hold.
Yep, yep.
And then gave him the release, and then I give him a treat. I don't use a lot of treats, but you might have heard me say a few times, I always use the treat at a delivery if the dog will take it. So what I mean by that is repetition creates an automatic response. If I have a dog that's not, or a puppy that's not giving the bird, and again, I don't know if this dog's been force-fetched or it's just a pup, but I will play with the puppy right in front of me and give it the bird, let it hold the bird, and then take, I like a really good treat, whatever it's really really excited to get. I'll even cut up a steak sometimes. My dogs just tell them no. CK, go lay down.
CK's loving on the attention right now.
So what I will do is I will give the dog the bird, hand it to him and let it take it, and I'll have a treat sitting right there looking, you know, so the dog can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will switch the treat for the bird, and I get something that the dog really likes. And I will do that a few times, give him the bird or toss it, comes back, hold it, give, and I switch the treat for the bird. And that's a positive at the end. And instead of a negative, you're taking my prize and I'm not getting anything. So what I'm trying to I'm trying to put a positive in the puppy's mind. And I do that a few times at a time, and then, you know, maybe once or twice a day, to where repetition creates that response of when the pup looks at you and you're going to give it a treat, it releases the bird. Okay.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I've had a lot of judges and people tell me, and I've mentioned this in earlier podcasts, that God, I love the way your dog presents the bird to you, how it lifts its head and holds it up and it's excited to release the bird into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason it's excited and it's looking up is I always hold the treat at my chest. So it's looking up where the treat is normally held, waiting for its treat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I give it the treat. Now when I do force fetch, what I do, again, I'll use a treat for the delivery, is I will hold the treat with one hand at my chest so the dog is looking up, and I will tell the dog hold, and I will place my other hand under the dog's jaw, like underneath, like it's going to deliver it, but I say hold instead of my release command. And then I'll bring my hand back up, place it underneath and say hold, bring my hand back up, and maybe the third time or the fourth time or the second time, I'm going to a little bit more advanced stuff here, I'll put my hand underneath the dog's jaw and I'll go give is my command. Some people use drop, and the dog will then release the bird into my hand, and I will give it the treat. And what that does, it stops your pup from anticipating when to release the bird. It holds the bird in its mouth. You put your hand down, you say hold. You bring it back, you say hold. You put it down, you say give. Boom, it drops it. So that way the puppy or the dog doesn't start spitting it out. So the few things I would do there is I would, first of all, make sure that the pup gets to prance around and hold that bird a lot. Usually what has happened, and I'm not saying this is what's happened here. Usually what has happened is the puppy has brought a bird back early on and somebody has taken the bird away right away, you know. And so it gets possessive. Generally speaking, when my pups first bring a bird back, I let them hold that thing till they're tired of holding it, to where they just spit it out and want to go get another bird, as long as they're not munching it. If they start to munch it, then I make the release command and I do it the way I told you. I either roll the lip or use the release switch on the flank. So I would say, you know, start working with the bird close to you, where you're just either tossing the bird like 10 feet, got the dog on the lead, try to make it positive, give the treat, hand the bird back, get the treat again. When the dog does retrieve a bird, let it keep it for a long time. When you do get the bird back, throw it and let it go get it again, you know, so it thinks it's going to be fun. Sometimes you find a pup that likes to do something else. For instance, CK, he loves to run for a bumper. He just loves it. When I get a bumper out, he's ready to go. In fact, he's usually running when he sees the bumper. And I'm just saying that that's what he likes to do. So if I know a pup likes to do something, CK's not treat-oriented at all. Then when I get the bird, I will do that. So I will have the bird released to me, and then I'll take the bumper and throw the bumper so the pup has fun doing something else. So what I'm trying to do is make the release a positive and not a negative.
Yeah,
And that's what I do. If you can't, then at some point in time, you have to do the release command, and the two commands I told you about will make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
No, that's great. Okay. I think that's really helpful. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and move on to our next question. And this one actually, I think, came from your YouTube channel, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep, it did, yep.
And somebody asking you about the types of birds that you use and how you take care of them.
Yeah, well, that's actually a good question, and I will throw out a couple of things. First of all, I will say that sometimes I do use Quail, but I never use Quail with a puppy except for maybe at the very beginning to make sure the pup knows that it can manhandle a bird if I have a pup that doesn't have much drive. But generally speaking, I don't use much Quail, and the reason is Quail are munchable and they're tasty, and a dog can swallow it in a heartbeat, a puppy. So I don't want to entice a young pup or dog to start eating birds or mouthing or eating, you know, swallowing the whole bird.
Yeah.
So I use mostly pigeons to start with, and I use pigeons because I can reuse them again and again and again. Some of my pigeons out here have been pointed 1,000 times. And they will be released. I can use them for steadiness. I can use them for pointing. I can throw the pigeons around them when they're on point to get them to be steady when birds are flushing. And I can shoot them when I need to when I get an overstock of pigeons. Or actually, I usually buy shooter pigeons because I don't like to shoot my pigeons.
So you get a little attached to them. Huh?
I do, yeah. So pigeons is the mainstay because I can reuse them again and again, and I can use them as flushing. I can use them for tossing around the bird. I can use them for stop to flush. I can use them to stretch a pup out, like we talked before, in the search mode if the dog's not searching far enough out. You know how I pop them up.
Yeah.
So that's the one I use the most, and they're very easy to take care of. I know my friend Bruce, he works with pigeons, and he's got a small coop. I think it's like 4 foot by 3 foot in his backyard, and he lives in the city, and he's got like 4 or 5 pigeons, and he can work his pup at the schoolyard or wherever. So really easy to use. They're there, you know, so pigeons is number one. The thing I mostly use is chuckers. When I'm dealing with dogs that I'm working with actual bird scent, maybe shooting over the dog, or steadiness when I have the chucker on a paracord, and we can talk to that when we get to steadiness. I have a paracord with a bolt on it, and I can throw the chucker 3 or 4 times if I'm working on a dog on steadiness that's advanced. Mm-hmm. Chuckers put up a lot of scent, and they're fairly strong, not real strong, but they're fairly strong, and they're a true game bird.
And
they're easy to maintain. Throw them some food. You don't bother them. You want them kind of wild. So toss them food, give them some water, and they're pretty hardy that way.
That's nice. Yeah, because even though there's a lot of places around the country that don't have like a wild population of chuckers, it sounds like there's a lot of other places where it's a very common training bird.
Yeah, and you would be surprised how quickly, and this has been asked and debated, how quickly a hunting dog can change to a different game bird and be just fine. You know, you go go hunt sharptail, and you never hunted it before, and all of a sudden your dog's pointing a sharptail. And then it points a sage grouse. Never seen one before.
Yeah, yeah. My older dog, Sadie, the first time she came across a grouse when we were up in the mountains, she pointed it. She'd never smelt one before, but she pointed it.
There you go. And you know, you might have to have biologists tell you why. I kind of think it's because the breasts on game birds are larger and they have maybe a different smell. I'm not sure. But for whatever reason, they transfer to game birds real quickly. And like a lot of dogs on pigeons, after they point them a while, they go, this is not a game bird. My older girls, they won't point pigeons anymore. Like, that's not a game bird. That's just a bird that you use for training. I'm not even going to worry about it. So that does happen with pigeons, but it never happens with chucker. I don't see that. I don't never say never, but I don't ever.
Yeah,
really,
well,
it's
probably because it's when you go out chucker hunting. I mean, it is something that has that real world experience that keeps getting added to it.
Yeah. So the next one that I do use is a pheasant, and I don't use pheasants for field work. I use the pheasants for tracking. Let me just mention something here. On the last podcast, we talked about tracking, and I mentioned that I started with a dead pheasant usually for me, or a dead duck, because a duck smells a lot. I don't think I mentioned that after I do some with dead birds for a while, I switch to a live bird, and my Velcro goes right around the top of the bird's body at the bottom of the wing. So if you ever held a pheasant, you can hold it by its wings by pulling both wings up above it.
Yeah.
So my lead that's on my paint pole has a Velcro right there, and I pull both of the wings up on the pheasant, and I wrap the Velcro at the bottom of the wings next to the body. Now the bird can't fly, but it can walk very well. And I have pheasants that have been, they walk like a puppy dog. I mean, they just, you put them on the lead and they go, okay, I know what we're doing. Off they go. And so I established that for a track, but I always leave a dead bird at the end of the track.
Yeah.
Because I don't want them to kill my pheasants. So
yeah. You want to be able to reuse that pheasant if you can.
Yeah. And I do. I had one pheasant that I used for years. We called him Felix because he was grabbed a few times and he was like a cat with nine lives. And what I did with that one, people are going to go, oh, you crazy fool. That I thought that pheasant earned its retirement. So I'm trying to think how many years. It was a number of years old. I took it out to a golf course that I used to golf at that had three courses, and they maintained the course around really well, and there was no coyotes around, and I released it on the golf course so it could so it could live its life out in luxury.
Living a life of luxury on a golf course.
Exactly, and that was Felix, so he was retired. And that pheasant was tracked at training events and at my training clinics and for clients, and that thing was tracked thousands of times, so... Anyhow, that's the birds that I use, and that's the reasons why.
Yeah. So. No, that's great. All right. Well, let's dive into what is a very big topic with a lot of different opinions about it. But tell us about, like, how you use e-collars, how you introduce them, why, what you think is valuable about them. And I think I remember in an early episode, you mentioned something about that when e-collars first came out, you were like, I'm never going to use one of those.
Absolutely.
Things.
Yep.
And now you're like, oh no, I'm going to use one of these all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that knowledge is getting out there that the e-collar is not a shock collar anymore, where the original ones were. They were specifically made just to shock the dog as a penalty. And when I saw people use those, I was one of those folks that said, I'm never putting one of those on a puppy. That's not going to happen. And I tell people this in my clinics, and it's in the book, that, you know, the e-collar nowadays has really become advanced compared to the original shock collar. And I tell them, if you think about the first computer, that first IBM computer that took the whole room to just calculate numbers. Mm-hmm. That was the original purpose of that of the original computer. And now your cell phone, which is what it's morphed from or developed from that original computer, your cell phone can do calculations, it can make phone calls, you can watch videos on it, you can text people on it, you can listen to music on it. Mm-hmm. So
you can do everything from the most important thing to the least important
thing. Yes. And if it wasn't for the start of the original computer, we wouldn't have our cell phones, right? So the e-collar to me has been developed in that manner. The original shock collar was very basic. It was a shock collar, and that's what it did. Nowadays, the e-collar have multiple stimulations levels to almost nothing or nothing, all the way to being a shock. They have vibration in them. They have beeper tones in them. They're coming out with voice, so you can actually talk to your dog when it's out there. So that e-collar is a whole different thing. It's the cell phone now. It's no longer just a big, huge computer. So.
Yeah.
And I find that using the e-collar properly is probably one of the most humane ways to train at a distance compared to speaking to what some of the other things that people have done in the past. Just like anything else, though, just like a baseball bat or a knife or a car or a swimming pool or a firearm, those things can be used appropriately and they can be used as a tool. They can be used inappropriately, and they can cause harm, and they can cause death. Mm-hmm. So your e-collar used inappropriately can be a problem.
Yeah.
But used appropriately, it's a very humane tool that works better than a lot of other methods that were used in the past. Mm-hmm. So I do use one. My dog's e-collars most of the time don't even have the prongs on them because I just use the beeper, and that's it. I take the prongs off because I'll wear them around the house all the time. My main house where I live is a few acres and there's no fences around. But so I just beep them when I want them so I don't have to call them and, yell, hey, come. I just hit the beeper and they come.
I do the same thing with my dogs where the beeper is kind of a recall.
Yep. So let's talk about how I introduce a puppy to an e-collar. First of all, I want to put the e-collar on the dog a few times during the week, throughout the day, maybe 2 to 3 hours a day, and not use it at all. Just put it on the dog. It becomes like a regular collar. So the dog gets accustomed to it, and it doesn't become what we call collar-wise. And the mistake a lot of people do is they throw the collar on the dog, and then they start using the collar.
Yeah.
Well, the dog goes, okay, you put this collar on me, and something happens around my neck. I know what's happening. My dogs don't even know the e-collar is something painful. When I grab an e-collar for my dogs, they run to me, and they put their head up. Because they think, oh, we're probably going outside or hunting or fun, do something fun. You know, to them, it's very, very positive. And they wear the e-collar a lot around the house just so to beep them, like I said. So first thing you want to do is get your dog or your puppy accustomed. And I usually start around 4 months old, somewhere thereabouts. I don't take my pups out until they're 4 months old to places that I don't know because they haven't had all their shots. So I will... At around 3 to 4 months old, I'll start throwing a collar on just to have it on, and then take my puppy when we go out and just play different areas. I'll have the e-collar on, and I won't be using it. I don't use it for weeks. So that's the first thing. Make sure your puppy knows the e-collar is just part of an everyday thing. It's really no different than its regular collar. And then after that, I do a command that the pup knows. And this is a warning I will give on the use of an e-collar, that you don't use the e-collar to train the beginning of a command and a compliance. In other words, the e-collar should be an extension of your training that has already taken place.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, most of your training has some kind of pressure somewhere. If you tell your puppy to sit, you push on its rear end or roll it back. So there's that physical pressure right there to make the dog, to make the pup or dog comply. If you tell your dog or your puppy to come and you've got it on a lead and you pull it to come, you're applying some pressure to have it come towards you. If you're teaching your dog to heel, you have a slip lead or something, you pull the dog into you as you make a turn to make it heel. So you're applying some type of pressure for the dog to understand what to do and comply, and then you should be giving it a positive reward so that it wants to learn, right? So the e-collar is just an extension on that. It is just a very light pressure to make the dog comply, but a dog should already know how to comply before you ever institute usage of an e-collar. I hope that's making sense.
Yeah. I mean, just basically it's the concept of, you know, you don't want to punish anyone, and especially a dog, for not knowing what it was supposed to do to begin with.
You will confuse the dog.
Yeah,
is what happens, and that makes the matters you know worse. Trying to make a dog comply when it's confused is one of the worst things you can do, and you've heard me say that before. So that e-collar is just an extension of your lead, so to speak, or of an extension of your arm to push down on a dog or to pull it in. That's all it is. And the dog already knows how to do it. And the way I do it is I start off with it on its lowest setting, and I have the puppy start running around. Now, this is after the pup has worn the e-collar for a while, and I'm watching it have fun, just out there having fun. I usually take it out in the field or run around with another dog. And I start it on the lowest setting, and I start turning the e-collar up until I see the puppy just make a slight turn of its head. Just turn its head like, what is that? Mm-hmm. What's that? Now I know the dog feels it, and that's what I call its training setting. So I know that the dog can feel that, but it's not hurting. It's not yelping. It's not barking. It's not shutting down. It's just like, what is that? Kind of like if somebody grabbed you by your I think it's called a trapeze muscle up above, and kind of squeeze on your shoulders, and you want to go, hey, what are you doing there? You know, you feel that squeeze. That's what I want the pup to feel. No pain, just kind of, what is that? Now I know the puppy's training setting. That's going to be my training setting for the pup. After I do that and I see what the pup does at that setting, I will pull the pup over to me, and I usually start with sit. Now, a lot of people will remember that, but I thought he doesn't do sit in the first year. I don't use sit a lot in the first year, but I certainly have taught the dog to sit, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And to go down.
Yeah, it's not a primary thing. It's, you know, just some another piece of that, like, obedience training.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have my dog sit much at all. I have it go to sit, and then I have it go to down.
Oh, yeah,
I don't do a
that's
lot,
right.
I
that's
don't
right.
do a lot of sitting. But it's easy to teach a dog to sit, and by then it already knows how to sit and knows how to go down. And plus, it's very easy to control with an e-collar. So what I do then is I grab the dog by the collar and have the control in my hand in one hand. So I grab its collar, have the control in one hand, and I put my hand on the top of its rump, and I say, sit. And I don't wait for the dog to sit. I'm not, because you'll confuse the dog, because it'll start going, well, what am I feeling? So I want to have my hands on the dog. So when I say sit, I roll the dog back as I pull with the collar and I push on its rump, and it knows what to do now. It sits down and the collar goes off. So I start as soon as I say sit, I start the stimulation, which is just a very squeeze on the dog, so to speak, and I push the dog into the sitting position and I turn the collar right off. So the dog goes, okay, I felt that. As soon as I sat down, I turned it off. Mm-hmm. I'll do that a couple of times. So the dog goes, gets it. They feel the stimulation. They sit, I turn it off. Just a few times. Then I'll put the dog on a lead and I'll walk around. And I don't care if you need to use a treat, whatever you do to get your dog to come back to you. But I want to make sure, again, I have something physical on the dog to make it comply.
Yeah.
And I will tell the dog to come. My recall command, right? And when I tell the dog to come, I pull on the lead. Now, and it was taught this early on. It already knows how to come. It already has a good recall, kind of knows what to do when I pull on the lead, or it should. And I'll pull on the lead, and as I pull on the lead and it starts coming to me, I turn the lead collar off right away, okay?
Yeah.
So as soon as it starts complying to come to me, I turn the e-collar off. And I'm going to throw out a warning here. In just a second. If it moves to the side or something, again, I use the lead, and I say, no, come. And I start the e-collar again. As soon as it's coming towards me, I turn the stimulation off.
Yeah.
That gets the dog to know that when you say come, to turn off the e-collar, it just has to start coming towards you. When you say sit, to turn off the e-collar, it just has to sit down. I can transfer this to woe. I can transfer it to heel. It doesn't hurt the dog at all. It just feels the slight uncomfortableness is the word I like to use. It feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just like if you're pushing on the dog's butt to get it to go down. That's uncomfortable for the dog. The stimulation now I can use teaches the dog how to turn the e-collar off. It learns that it has control of the e-collar. And the one caution I want to throw out here is there is a couple of systems out there of training that teach to turn the e-collar on at a low setting and keep it on until the pup gets to you. So say the puppy is 10 feet away from you, and you say, come, you leave that e-collar on the entire 10 feet. If it's 10 yards away from you and you say, come, you start the e-collar when you say, come, and when it gets to you, the e-collar goes off. So therefore, that e-collar is on the whole way the dog is coming to you. I not only don't like that, I think it's inappropriate, but I've also trained 4 dogs now in the past 2 years that I've had real problems with that had that used that system and used that way of training. And here's what happens is they use the e-collar specifically for the recall command, and they keep the dog stimulation from when they say it until the dog gets to them. So what is the dog thinking the whole time? That puppy is saying, I got to get to my owner. I got to get to my owner. I want to turn this thing off, so I got to get to my owner. So it's running toward you. Yeah, it makes a great recall command, although you're stimulating your puppy the whole time. Excuse me. But now when we go to advanced training, like stop to flush when we use a nick to slow the dog down, mm-hmm. or we go to healing, or we go to steadiness training, or we try to introduce that to a whoa out in the field where you want your dog to stop in the field, what has happened with the 4 dogs that I dealt with that were trained that way, as soon as you press the e-collar, and we're talking, I use e-collar force fetch. None of it works, because what does the dog do as soon as it feels the e-collar stimulation?
It instantly comes back to you.
It instantly comes back to you, no matter where it's at or what you're doing. If you're trying to use it for it to hold something, if you're trying to use it to woe, if you're trying to do it to steadiness, these dogs, all four of them, as soon as you did the e-collar, they came running back to you. Well, there you go. Now you've got a puppy or dog who you can use the e-collar with for a recall command, and you're basically done doing it. And not only that, you've stimulated your dog the whole time.
Yeah.
That's a bit confusing to the dog, to me, because it's trying to comply. It's coming to you. You told it to come, and it's coming to you, but yet it's still getting the pressure applied to it or stimulation applied to it. So my clarification there is, when you use it for the recall command, as soon as the dog is coming towards you, that turns it off so that it's complying when it comes to you. When it gets to you, always, always a lot of praise, always a positive when it gets to you. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Now, you always want to end it when they do what you want them to do, praise the heck out of them.
Praise the heck out of them, always. Yep. And then you can transfer that to the woe. You can transfer it to sit. You can transfer it to healing. That's one of my favorite techniques to use with force fetch. If I have to do force fetch on a dog, is just light stimulation with the dog taking it, because the dog's uncomfortable. It's turning its head, and it takes the item, and everything goes away. And it's like, okay, that was easy. I can just turn it off. So proper use of the e-collar in that manner, I think, is something that you can use away from you at a distance very humanely. And I can tell you, the old training, they would shoot rock salt at a dog. They would put a long lead on a dog with a choke chain and give it a yank. They would do a lot of stuff to try to get a dog to comply when it was 10, 20, 30 yards away from you, 80 yards away from you. With the proper use of an e-collar, all you're doing is telling the dog, with some kind of pressure, just like you would use with your hands, you need to comply. But once you comply, you turn it off, so you have control. That's how I use my e-collar. That's how I use my training setting on the e-collar. Many times when you get a dog that's hyped up, say it's in the field or you're working with a bird, you've got to move that training setting up one or two settings, because
they're just a little bit more amped and aren't going to notice it maybe as much.
Yep. So now, as you heard on my e-collars, I don't care what brand you have, I like to have three settings, three buttons, separate buttons. One is going to be the training setting that we just talked about. That's going to be my puppy's training button. There's going to be another button that I call the save dog button. That's going to be set as a shock. And I'm going to use that for a situation where I want to save my dog from getting hurt, injured, or maybe death. And let's say a rooster flies up and your dog's heading for a busy street. And you're yelling and it's going to walk right through that training button and there's cars on that busy street. I'm going to use my save a dog button. I want my dog to go, ouch, what the heck was that, and stop. I would rather have my dog do that than be killed by a car or a truck. If it's going towards a porcupine, if it's going towards a snake, I will use the save a dog button. So that button is there to where I can't grab my dog, but the dog is in some type of peril where it could get injured or hurt or killed. Mm-hmm. So that's automatically set there. So that's the save a dog button. That's where I'm going to use it, you know, like I said, to do something to make that dog really do feel a shock. That's where that shock collar comes back in. And then I'm going to use my beeper. What I do with my beeper, and you can use beeper or vibration. I use beeper for a couple of reasons. One is I know when the beeper's going off. I can hear it. And timing is everything on compliance with the dog. Sometimes a split second or two can make a difference on the dog realizing what it's supposed to do and understanding, right? So if I'm using a vibration and I can't feel it, and I'm expecting the dog to comply, and so I grab it and make it comply or whatever, the dog hasn't felt the vibration, I don't know. I'm confusing the dog.
Yeah.
I know when the beeper is going off. I know what's happening. So I know my dog is either not complying or complying and has heard the beeper, right? So what I do then is I just, I just like we talked about transferring commands earlier on, where you say the new command after the old command, and then later you say the new command before the old command, and the dog starts complying with the new command. You know, like, you know, whatever. We've talked to a couple of them, like come and a whistle, okay? So my recall command is come, then I add the come with a whistle afterwards, then I add the whistle with the come afterwards, and then pretty soon the dog just comes to the whistle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So I'm going to do the same thing with the beeper. And on my recall command, I'm going to do the beeper first, and then I'm going to say come. If the dog doesn't come, I'm going to add the stimulations come and do the come again. So I'm going to do the beeper first, say come. But I do a long beep with my recall command. So I press the button and I want it to go beep, 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 beep. And I'm going come. And the dog should start coming. If it doesn't, I go to the stimulation come. The dog starts coming. Mm-hmm. What that does is it makes the dog anticipate the next step. Either you pulling on a lead after the beep or stimulations for it to come. So the dog hears the beep and it goes, I'm going to comply now because I can comply with the beep and I don't have to deal with anything. I'll just come in here, right? So I'll do that. Now on the whoa command, I'll just do like a real short beep, beep, beep. And I'll go, whoa. You know, first I'll go, whoa, beep, beep, whoa, and beep, beep prior to. So what I'm doing there is just getting the dog, the puppy used to a couple of beeps means whoa with that command. Now I can whoa my dog with a beeper if I want to out in the field. Again, this is I use this later on where we're dealing with steadiness because when we get to stop to flush, I use the nick too. We'll talk about that when we get to stop to flush. So I just add the beeper before the command and before this. I mean, excuse me. I add the beeper with the command before the stimulation, and the dog starts learning. Oh, okay. I'll just comply to the beeper. And I'm telling you, my dogs, most of the time until we get in the hunting field, they don't even have the prongs on because they react to the beeper. And that's it. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of people say that doing the vibration is bad for a dog and it's worse than the stimulation and all that. Well, I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you that. I'm not even sure they know.
Well, and I've even heard of a guy that he uses the vibration as like a good job. Like, so when he overlays like, lots of praise with the vibrations so that it's like, oh, you're doing exactly what I want you to. And they just get that little vibration so that they know it's like that reinforcement of like a good girl.
Yeah.
So you don't have to yell at them to do it.
Right. Right. So, well, that's your praise is the vibration.
Yeah.
And I don't do that, but I have heard of that. But I've also heard that vibration really affects the dog emotionally and so on and so forth. I don't know.
Yeah. Cause I also have a buddy that, that he tried using an e-collar with his dog and said that, man, it reacted the harshest to a vibration.
Yep, and I've heard that a lot. There's a couple things there, but one is I think you have to introduce your dog properly, like we said.
Yeah.
You have to start, and then the vibration comes much later, so the dog knows what's to do. I use the vibration to transfer to deaf dogs. I've trained a couple of dogs that were deaf with vibration. My girl Coda now is deaf, and she goes by all hand signals and by vibration. Same thing I do is if the dog knows the command and I want to transfer to vibration and they can hear, so on and so forth, I just add the vibration just like I would a beep. Mm-hmm. But if the dog cannot hear, if the dog is trained by hand signals, I'll use the hand signal with the vibration so that it understands. And if I can't do that, I will physically use the vibration with the dog, which is what I had to do with the deaf dogs that were born deaf. I'm doing the vibration. The while I'm doing the vibration, I'm physically making the dog comply with my hands while we use the vibration. So I think the vibration can be used appropriate, just like anything else. Used appropriately, it can be an excellent tool. Used inappropriately, it can confuse the dog and make matters worse. Mm-hmm. So,
some of that is probably also just like a reading your dog, and because you know you didn't say like on a Garmin put it to a 10 or put it to a 3, because you know how that dog feels it is going to be different for each dog.
Absolutely, each dog is different, just like each human being is different, and you know, use the settings that work for your puppy and use the settings that make it comply to it's just an uncomfortable pressure. so that the dog enjoys it and learns. And I'm not saying, oh, well, people can say it's not going to enjoy the stimulation. Well, I'll tell you what, my dogs come running to my e-collar because they enjoy what we do when we have the e-collar on.
Yeah,
we're going outside doing it. No, when I put it on the house, they know. I just put it on the house. They just, you know, if I go to open the door and I grab the e-collar because I'm going to let them outside. I want to call them. They run up and I put the e-collar on their phone. Mm-hmm. They're going to go outside and have fun. If I'm hunting and I open that door and I grab the e-collar, man, they are right there because they know we're going to go hunting. Put that thing on me, right?
Yeah, right.
You can use that e-collar. It can be very positive, used correctly. It can save your dog's life if need be. It can have you be able to enforce the compliance of a command when the dog is at a distance from you. Mm-hmm. And remember, consistency is the key, and you're always training your dog. So if your dog has learned that it's 25 yards away and it doesn't have to comply to whatever, and it's being stubborn, you have to make it comply when you get it back. But having the e-collar overlapped into your already trained techniques can add the distance training compliance mode. And I think that's huge for a dog. Mm-hmm. So I hope all this is making sense to everybody.
Yeah. I think this has been a really good conversation with it. I do have a couple questions about, because you have mentioned in the past that, like, if you have somebody that's coming here to do training with you, and one of the things that you're going to work on is e-collar stuff, uh-huh, that you tell them, like, put that e-collar on at home. Don't wait till you get here.
Yes.
And I feel like one of the things, and I have been very guilty of this, is, like, if I show up for a NAVDA training day, like, as I, you know, I get there and open the tailgate, pull my dog out, and literally 5 minutes before we start our training run is when I'm throwing that e-collar on them.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that you think that I probably should have put it on at home.
Yep.
But maybe unpack for us, like, when you go hunting, when you're planning on training, like, when are you putting these e-collars on the dogs to help them, to just make it so that you are as successful as possible with it?
Okay, so it kind of depends where your dog's at in training on that e-collar when you're putting it on. When I tell people when I'm going to introduce them to an e-collar here at our training facility, I tell them start putting the e-collar on weeks in advance. Put it on every day for a few hours a day before you come here. During the day, put it on, take it back off, put it on every time you go outside, put it on, take the prongs off if you want. Just put it on when you go outside so the dog gets used to you putting it on when we go outside. I tell them to start doing that well before they even come here. And then when they're coming here for the first time, I tell them to put the e-collar on if we're going to go into e-collar training before they even head out the door. Just put it on an hour before they head out the door if they want. Because I don't want the dog to associate the e-collar to the stimulation. I want the e-collar that's on them to just be part of something they wear now and then. That's all it is. Now, if you have a dog that's already been e-collar trained and it's been using an e-collar for a long time and knows how to shut it off, and it knows it's positive to it, it's not worried about it or anything, then you can put the e-collar on right when you get out of the car. It's not going to bother the dog at all. It's already used to it. So if you're in the early training period where you're just establishing the e-collar, it's new to the dog, it's part of the process that it's learning right now, you want to have that e-collar on well before you start using it. But if the dog's already e-collar trained, like I said, I get my dogs out of the car, I grab the e-collar to go hunt, man, they're putting their head up. Let's go.
Depending
on where you're at with your training is makes a difference for you know, to when you're putting that e-collar on. At the beginning, you want it on. When you're not using it, you want it on a lot, and you want it on before you ever use it when you go to the training sessions or you start doing your own training sessions.
Yeah.
Answer that question okay?
Yeah. I think that's helpful to think about, because it's not again, like with basically everything, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Nope.
It's kind of you got to know this your situation, where you're at with your dog, where your dog's at, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I mentioned this in an earlier podcast. I see people show up in NAVDA training days and they got the e-collar on their dog's belly, you know, and there's a lot of people who train with, e-collars on a dog's belly. I don't, because my dogs are learning, right out of the gate. At 8 weeks old, they're learning, right? Not only that, the dog is used to having a lead on its head, and it's used to you grabbing its collar and using it maybe to sit down or whatever. So it's used to it there. The only time I use the e-collar on a dog's belly is to get a dog when they're brought to me and they're laying down or sitting down on point. So I don't use it around the belly for woe. We've already been over woe, but I'm just kind of tossing that out. So again, e-collar usage can be very humane. It can be an extension of you. It can be less than the pressure of you pushing down on a dog's rump or putting a, you know, I hear people say, I'd never use a e-collar. I don't like Zoom. They got one of those pinch collars with prongs on their dog's throat. They're pulling on it, or they're yanking on a choke collar, you know. I would much rather have a light stimulation where the dog feels uncomfortable than have prongs going into my dog's neck, my puppy's neck. So I think, again, if you use the tool correctly, it can be one of the most humane tools to use with a dog and a puppy. Used incorrectly, it can be one of the worst tools to use with a dog or a puppy. So if you're going to, like anything else, if you're going to be working with your dog, it's your responsibility to make sure your dog is safe. It's your responsibility that your dog is and your puppy is well cared for, and that you're using the appropriate techniques that make your dog comply with a means that it wants to comply and it's happy at the end.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. All yeah.
Right. How are we doing on time?
We're only at 45 minutes right now.
Good.
So we can
continue on.
Yeah. We were going to talk some about some GPS with it.
Yep.
And I also figured that, you know, maybe we are not endorsed by anybody, but maybe you could talk about some of the callers that, you know, that that have those three things that you really like and what have been pros and cons to some of the ones that you've encountered.
Okay, most of all the good brands have those three, and I mentioned on an earlier podcast, and I'll mention it again, don't get a cheap e-collar for your dog. You spend emotionally a lot with your dog, physically a lot with your dog, and financially a lot with your dog. Don't cheap out on an e-collar, because if you don't have an e-collar that's giving the nice, easy stimulation at a consistent setting, and you know that it's doing the right thing at the right time, you're really confusing your dog and screwing it up. So get one of the major brands. There's a lot of them out there, Garmin, Dogtra, Sport Dog, Innotek. I used to use a lot of Innotek. I don't even know if they're out there anymore. I don't think they are. But almost all the high-quality e-collar systems that are out there, I think, will do well by you. And just look at the models that have the three buttons on them. We're going to get into GPS. I'm going to take a sip of water here just for a second. You can hear my voice is starting to go. I think a GPS is very important for a dog. And we'll go into that in a little bit. But the reason I bring up the GPS right now is I have a number of e-collars here that I use that are just e-collars. And then when I go hunting, I have an e-collar that has a GPS system on it. A lot of my clients don't have either. They don't have a GPS and they don't have an e-collar yet. And they ask me which one to buy. And I tell them, if you're just going to train, you know, just make sure you get a good one that has three buttons on it. You can program it as we discussed and as we've been using here at the Gundog Ranch. However, I highly advise that you get a GPS system for your dog. And if you're going to get one system, you're not going to get a simple GPS system and then maybe a simple e-collar system and then maybe a more elaborate GPS system. If you're not going to pay that money out front to get both of them, the one that I recommend is a Garmin 550 Plus, because it has the three buttons. It has the GPS system that you can use, a very simple GPS system. It ties in with the Instinct Watch, and I think the Phoenix is the other one. And it's very simple to use. It's just basically an e-collar system with three buttons and lots of stimulations, lots of tone, different, you know, you can use tone, you can use vibration, you can use different stimulations, and you have a GPS system within. That's probably the basic one that will give you everything that you need. Now, if you want to go to something a little bit more extravagant and have a regular e-collar and then get a, you know, Alpha 200i or something like that, in reach and all that stuff, we can go into that. But then you can just get whatever good brand e-collar that has three buttons, I think you're safe to go with. The GPS system to me is, again, something that I think everyone should have who goes out in the fields with their dogs. And I can tell you stories. There's stories in the book. I've been with people who've lost their dogs. I've seen people who have lost their dogs like the day before I saw them. And I've heard the stories. And it is heartbreaking when you lose your puppy or your dog. It's just heartbreaking. And, you know, one of the stories I told earlier was a guy that showed up, and I won't go over the whole story. It's on one of our earlier podcasts, but he said, "No, my dog's good. It doesn't go very far. We're quail hunting together, and I don't need a GPS on it." And second covey of quail, they could not find the dog. An hour and a half, 2 hours later, that guy's crying because he's lost his puppy, and that's the guy who sat there next to me and said, "It's bad enough that I've lost my dog, but now I have to go home and tell my family and my two sons that I've lost their dog. I've lost their best friend." Yeah. You can imagine how that feels.
And my wife would not be happy if I was like, well, they both didn't come back.
Yeah. And also, a GPS system does a number of other things. I hunt a lot throughout the United States, and your dog can be literally 50 yards away in some cover, and you don't know where it's at.
Yeah.
And if it's on point, you can't find it. You know, yeah, you can put a beeper on it that beeps, beep, 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 beep. But if you're going to do all that, just get a GPS. But it's kind of thrilling sometimes to look down at your dog and on the GPS and go, ooh, my dog's over that hill down there, and it's locked up on point. And you go over there, and there's your dog right there. A few years ago, I was doing a guided hunt for the military, and we were hunting corn stubble. And we came out of the corn stubble. It was really high. It was really thick. And we got a bunch of birds out. And everybody walks out. And I turn around and I look for my dog, Coda. And she's nowhere to be found. And I go, where's Coda? And I look at the GPS. And she's 23 yards or so back in the cornfield, not moving. And I tell a couple guys, my dog's still in there on point. And they're like, what? And I go, she's on, we got to go back in. It's about 23 yards back in. We walk back in. Sure enough, there she is. And over there, like, oh my goodness, that was crazy. But, you know, you just never know where that dog is going to be. It can be 20 yards away from you and you can't see it. I think a GPS system is important. I use it all the time, especially in the mountains, chucker hunting. When I travel across the United States, sometimes I hunt CPR fields that are so thick that I can't see my dog at all, and I have to find them with the GPS to flush the birds. So I think as a safety precaution for your dog, they're great to have. I also think it adds to the hunt, and it can help you find more birds when your dog's on point and you can't find your dog. So I highly recommend one. I know there's some breeders out there that if you don't show them you have a GPS, you don't get your puppy. So some people feel that concerned about them. And look, we spend health insurance, we spend for food, we spend for training.
Oh yeah. Investment is huge.
Is huge. And that's, like we said before, that's just the financial, emotional emotional is even more so. Mm-hmm. So, the new e-collar systems compared to your old shock collar systems, have the capability to have you work with your dog in a way that is very humane, yet it works. They also have the capability to have you track your dog and know where your dog is at all times. That's huge.
Yeah.
My suggestion is that you get a GPS. If you want to use an e-collar, do it the way I've explained here, so that the dog learns to turn off the e-collar. Do it in a way that the dog enjoys the outcome. And what I mean by that is that if you teach a dog to learn, we've talked about this before, and the outcome of the compliance is very positive, just no different than you pulling on a lead or you pushing on the dog's rump or what have you, that dog learns to learn and wants to learn more. And after you've developed that scenario in a puppy or a dog, you can do almost anything with a dog. Overlaying that that e-collar in an appropriate way expands that to where you can do more stuff with it. You can do stuff with your dog to comply when it's in a distance. One of the things that we'll get to at some point is force fetch. And I use the e-collar a lot on force fetch. Again, people pinch the ear. They use a nail in the ear. They turn the lip. They put a half hitch on the toe and pull a toe. All that stuff. I can just put my e-collar on a low stimulation and have the dog take it, and it's so much easier and so much more humane. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that just popped into my head as I was thinking about it is, so when you get a new system, do you have any sort of routine that you do to get to know the system before you put that collar on your dog?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question, by the way.
Because I could think about if it's a brand new thing and you're excited to use it, you throw it on your dog and you mess up because it's on a higher setting than you thought it was on, or you thought you were hitting one button when really you were hitting another. And so, yeah, do you have any sort of routine that might help people with that?
Yes. What I do is I turn the e-collar on, I charge it all up, I check the lights, I make sure that everything's working, and I put it on my palm. Put it on the palm of my hand, and I use it on myself. And I can tell you, all four of my sons will say, yeah, Dad's done it with us. They like to play a game because you can't. When I give you my dog's e-collar, and I've mentioned this in the past, and I'm at a clinic and I take the e-collar right off my dog and I say, here, put this on your palm. I'm going to press it. And I press it. People go, I can't feel that. I go, yeah, you're right. That's my dog's training setting. They can feel it a little bit. So I want to know that I can't feel it. I want to know that the settings I've done is correct. So I put the thing right in the palm of my hand and I try it. And I turn it up till I can feel it. And it'll just be just a little, and I go, okay, you know, I can feel deer. And then I turn it back down. I start low. Mm-hmm. My sons say, okay, give it to me. Let's see how far I can go. You know, they're, well, I got to this setting. They're a little more crazy than I am. But
I did one time in high school, we had a lab that he was an outside dog and he barked all the time. And so we tried to use one of those bark collars on him. And it just didn't seem to work. And so I took it off the dog and I put it up to my throat and it about dropped me.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to throw this caution out to people. And again, if they've heard our earlier podcast, they've already heard this. And that is, I mentioned the system that was having the stimulation on a puppy from when you tell it to come till it gets to you, whether it's 10 yards away or 20 yards away or 30 yards away or 10 feet away, you're keeping the stimulation on the whole time. I think that's wrong. I tell everybody, I think that's just wrong. It's inappropriate to do to a dog or a puppy. So that's the one case where I've dealt with pups the last 2 years that that system has been used and you can't hardly do anything with the pups other than the recall with the e-collar. I'm going to tell you that I throw a caution out on people that are going to do snake avoidance with an e-collar or use an electrical fence before the puppy is introduced properly like we have just discussed.
Yeah. Okay?
Because what can happen is you go to snake avoidance, and what do? They slap an e-collar on your dog, right? And then they take it by the snake, and then they shock it. And so the dog, although it associates that with the snake, it also, its first experience of having a knee collar on its neck was a shock. Mm-hmm. Now you've got to overcome that fear of the e-collar when you put it on your dog. The same thing with a fence. Yes, you can put the e-collar on your dog, and you can have it run around for all over the place before you turn your fence on, your e-fence on, so the dog gets used to the e-collar. But the bottom line on that is when it does hit the fence, it's going to get shocked. And I want my puppy to have a positive experience with a e-collar and know that it has control to turn it off, and that the stimulation is mild. It's not even a pressure. It's an uncomfortableness, and completely comfortable with the e-collar because then I can train it on all kinds of things, and then go to snake avoidance, and then use an e-fence if I want to, because by that time, that's an add-on to the collar and not something that was its initial exposure. And so it doesn't get fearful of the collar and it doesn't come running to you, you know, that type of thing.
So
a caution on that, you know, try to introduce your puppy first if you can. appropriately with the e-collar, if you plan to use the e-collar in the future, prior to doing snake avoidance or using it with an electrical fence, any fence. Mm-hmm. Trying to think if there are any other cautions out there. I'm sure there are. I get these questions a lot when I'm doing my clinic. I usually have a whole lot of questions on e-collars. I mean, that becomes a very, very hot topic sometimes. When they see my dogs work with an e-collar, and when I explain it to them, I've had people actually call me and send me. 2 years ago, I had a clinic out here, and the lady had trained with somebody else, and she was totally against e-collars. And so I talked to her how we would use it, and I showed her my dogs, and I said, you know, it's very humane. She goes, you know, you make that sound not so bad. And so I explained to her how to do it, and she opened up her mind. She texted me, I don't know, it was like 3 months later. She said, you know what? You were absolutely right. This does not hurt my dog. This is something that I would never have thought I could use and feel comfortable using. And now I'm you know, you've opened my eyes to it, and I'm really glad that I met with you and did this. So I think the proper exposure and the proper introduction, the proper usage of an e-collar can make a big difference in your training program. Can you do it without an e-collar? Sure. But it's a little bit harder when the dog's out at a distance. Mm-hmm. And if you run into an area where you want to save your dog from something, it's good to have that e-collar there. And if you run into an area where you've lost your dog, it's good to have that GPS there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great way to end it right now. And, yeah. So once again, thanks everybody for listening to the Tips and Tales podcast. You can find us on Instagram. And make sure that if you have any questions, especially, you know, about any of the previous topics that we've talked about, or if there's something else that sparks into your mind, you can write in to the tipsandtalespodcast@gmail.com. And you might hear an answer here on the podcast, like some people did today.
Yeah, I also want to tell everybody to have a happy new year. And I hope 2023 will be a great year for you bonding with your pup and developing a team companion, a situation with your new puppy or your seasoned bird dog.
Yeah. Well, and as always, remember that blessed is the man and woman who lives with a bird dog by their side. Thanks for listening.